Dudes, Dates, and Mates with your host, Damona Hoffman.
Oh, hello, lovers. It's me, Damona Hoffman, here to make modern love simple for you. I am sitting here in studio next to my co-host, Ray Christian, the CEO of the Techspert app. Hello, sir.
What's up, Ms. D?
I'm just ready to decode this modern love dilemma that we're dealing with in modern times.
You're such a decoder.
I have my decoder ring. No, I'm kidding. Wouldn't that be neat, though, if we could use like a dating decoder ring? That's kind of what Techspert is for people.
Just like read people's minds?
Yeah, yeah. Like, what are people thinking in the world of love? It would be very helpful, I tell you, on Tinder. And that's why we have such an exciting show for you today. I have an awesome guest waiting in the wings for us, David Rodwin. He is the Moth Story Slam champion. He's creator of the show F Tinder. That's F as in, you know, the F word. F Tinder, A Love Story, which is now playing at the Hollywood Fringe Festival. And then we're going to do a little technically dating. We'll talk about questions that have come in on the Techspert app, like how to end a two-month relationship, what to do when an F buddy is expecting, as in a baby. And we'll ask, can you love a liar? Producer Thomas, are you as excited as I am about today's show?
You betcha.
What do you think about this Tinder situation?
I'm very interested.
Are you jealous that you didn't get to do it?
Oh, Tinder in general?
Yeah.
I'm definitely curious to kind of, I'm a little, yeah, I'm definitely curious to experience it, but I was shacked up before the dating app boom happened.
You and me both.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we'll just have to live vicariously through our guest for today, David Rodwin. He's produced and performed 7 one-man shows, and now he's making headlines with his newest performance, F Tinder, A Love Story. Please give big smooches to David Rodwin.
Hey, how you doing?
Hello.
Oh, I had to give you a kiss. I don't know if you... I forgot to prepare you. A kiss was coming for our big smooches. David, so I got the chance to see your show. It's very, very racy and very, very honest. And it's basically, if I could sum it up in a nutshell, it's about your Tinder exploits in San Francisco. You meet some very colorful and very kinky people up there.
Yeah.
And I really wonder, because you've lived in different places around the globe, around the U.S., around the globe. You've lived in different places.
Yeah.
Do you feel like this experience that you had with Tinder, is it unique to where you live, or do you feel like Tinder is disrupting the dating game overall?
It's a really good question. And, you know, I cannot answer fully because I only began using Tinder basically right when I moved to San Francisco almost exactly 2.5 years ago. I'd been living with someone and I was in a committed relationship. And when I had last been dating, Tinder wasn't around. So for me, it was my first time using Tinder. Now, I had been dating online before that. So I have that as a reference. But dating on Tinder, and not just Tinder, but all of the different dating apps in San Francisco, was wildly distinct from dating elsewhere and at other time periods. So how much of it is San Francisco? I'm not exactly sure. Now, when I have traveled, I have used Tinder. I've only been on a few dates in Los Angeles and New York with that. And those are the two main cities that I've lived in. When I was traveling abroad last year, I did try Tinder a little bit. And there is an enormous story about that that's in my book of F Tinder that I literally did not have time to talk about in the show that I'm doing right now. Because the 1 week I spent at the Cannes Film Festival, it could do – I might actually come back next year with an entire show just about that. Even though there was only one person that I matched with on Tinder there, we're actually still friends. We have never had sex. But she's a high-end escort, and she gave me a view into a world that I really knew very little about.
That's really saying something, David, that experience could make a whole show, because – I mean, some of these stories that you tell at the Hollywood Fringe Festival, pretty unusual. Like, a little bit of a sex party with someone that you were dating. Polyamorist that her third rebound.
Well, the polyamory thing is very interesting, as is the question of marriage and children, especially in San Francisco. So in L.A. and New York, when I was dating previously online or meeting people in person, the vast majority of women I met eventually at some point wanted to A, get married, and B, have children. In San Francisco, I have literally, I believe without exception, not been on a date with a person three times who wanted to have children. Some of them still wanted to get married, but the women that I've dated in San Francisco do not want to procreate.
Is that something about the ones that you're swiping on, though?
I mean, the people that I'm talking about, I certainly wanted to be in serious relationships with, and this also includes people who I met in real life. These are, you know, nice Jewish girls I met at Temple, as well as people that I met on Tinder. I feel like this is very much now, and again, I don't know if like this is sweeping the nation where people don't want to get married and have kids, or at least not have kids, or if this is a particularly San Francisco issue.
It is sweeping the nation, but it seems like maybe you're in a pool of early adopters of this.
Yes, no, I think that's totally true. And I do think that the polyamory movement, the epicenter is San Francisco.
You will see other
examples of this. You know, in New York City, out in Bushwick, there's something called the House of Yes that started a little over a year ago. And all of my burner friends in New York were greatly attracted to that because it was a very sex positive, non-monogamous kind of environment. But, you know, many of the authors, a lot of the seminal works in non-monogamy are often based here. Not all, but a number of them. And that influences the culture.
Hey, David, it's Ray here. So Neil Strauss did a deep dive into that polyamory culture. If you had a gun to your head, do you think that a polyamorous relationship can work in the long term?
It's a great question, and I should start by saying I don't think I consider myself polyamorous. I have found myself in situations where I was in an active and verbalized non-monogamous series of relationships, but I know people who are committed to a life of polyamory, and they always want to be like that. That's not me. I actually would very much like to meet someone and have them be a partner for life and to have children together, biologically, ideally.
So hard to say on a dating app.
Oh, it is. No, it's actually really fascinating because I've played with my profiles. And when I have had, as I do actually now, I'm barely using dating apps. And honestly, I almost stopped dating nearly entirely this entire year, the last 6 months, for a host of reasons, Damona. You understand, having heard the end of my show, last year ended somewhat traumatically for me in the dating world, and I just haven't gotten back to it.
Here's a question, though, because one of the I did read the reviews that have been written about the show as well as seeing it myself. And one of the reviewers said, the Moth Champion regales us with succinct storytelling that palpably evokes his addiction to Tinder while in San Francisco. Yeah. I have heard that Tinder is in some ways rewiring our brains. Do you feel like you had an addiction to Tinder?
In a certain way, yes. And I actually, and sometimes when I do the show, I have used that actual word. You know, when I'm doing the show, I'm improvising the words that I say. The stories are generally the same, but how it comes out each night is slightly different. It's not written. I don't have a script. Whereas the book is obviously written, and I'm still in the process of completing that. But in terms of the addiction, you know, they have attempted to gamify all of these dating apps. Tinder, if I'm not mistaken, originally, when you match with someone, it used to say, do you want to send them a message or do you want to keep playing?
Yes, they changed that about a year ago.
Yeah, now it's, I think, keep swiping or keep searching or something like that. But, like, they were acknowledging that this is a gamification of dating. And like many different dating or game apps, you know, I tried Plants vs. Zombies literally for a project I was working on because one of the engineers was saying, this is like Plants vs. Zombies. And I don't play any games on my phone because I know that I get hooked on them. So for research, for this one thing that I was working on, I downloaded it and I lost a week of my life because I got so addicted to Plants vs. Zombies. Tinder and the other apps are like that because you are constantly wondering who's out there. Do they like me? Is there someone else? And also, everyone is doing that. So all the connections are very elusive. You can connect with someone, and if you don't begin a conversation and make a date right away, they often just sort of disappear. Now, sometimes they will actually delete their profile. You'll delete their profile. Or they will just sit there, sort of like stale ghosts. And occasionally, I've had people, and sometimes I have tried to revive those things. What's interesting is because there's so many different dating apps, I will match on a dating app with someone. I'll begin a conversation. It will, for whatever reason, she gets busy, I get busy, neither of us are super interested, we're dating other people. We don't actually meet. Then we match months later on another app. And then sometimes even a third app. And my favorite line, one woman wrote me saying, I think I know you from Tinder.
You're famous on Tinder.
Yeah.
Do you feel like it's changing the courtship process? Like, you know, I've been in the online dating space a long time, David.
Yeah.
And when I started online dating, I realized that it gave me some control over my dating life that I didn't otherwise have. And so I could message the men that I actually wanted to go out with, and I could ignore the ones that, you know, the holler on the street kind of guys just like, hey, girl, that I wouldn't actually want to engage with. And it's something that I've advocated for women doing since I began coaching over 10 years ago. And I see now everyone else is starting to realize this and adopt this. And I'm wondering if it's changing the dynamic where women are becoming more empowered in dating and are in some cases becoming the chasers or the aggressors. Is it throwing off the balance of courtship?
I wouldn't say that exactly. So I originally thought Tinder was a hookup app. That's how it was, frankly, to my understanding, originally designed. And I was talking with a female friend of mine who was saying that she can't do OkCupid anymore because she got so over inundated with messages since she had no control over who was sending her messages. She literally hired an assistant who went through and triaged all her messages based on the criteria that she was interested in a guy. And then that assistant passed her on the ones that survived her criteria. Now, on Tinder, like you were pointing out, and also on Bumble and a number of other ones, you both need to swipe yes before any communication can happen. That said, on Tinder, I have found women never write first unless they are escorts. That's 99% of the time.
You know, it's funny. Tinder is kind of like veering into this eponym status where when you say Tinder, you just think all dating apps, like tissue,
like
you think Kleenex. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly.
Do you find, have you seen a big difference between your experience on the various different dating apps?
That's a really interesting question. There are definitely distinctions. So the people who I know who are most involved in the non-monogamous and poly worlds prefer OkCupid, partially because people can identify themselves and they can search for people more easily in that realm. And the profiles are more detailed. So also if people are into kink, they can actually, if they want to, go into some descriptions of what kind of kink they are interested in. On Tinder, the profiles are very small. You're limited to, like, I don't know, the equivalent of 2 or 3 tweets. So, and a lot of people include almost no information, almost intentionally sometimes. Again, I have female friends who also prefer Tinder over OkCupid because the profiles are shorter because they don't have time to read long profiles.
Yeah, but they have time to go on these, you know, crazy ass dates. That's a thing that's so mind-boggling to me that people would rather waste time sitting across from someone that they have no business actually meeting than go through the profiles and thoroughly sort to qualify people for the date.
I find it surprising as well. Now, Bumble is the one that I was most hopeful for because that's the one where it's essentially Tinder. In fact, it was founded by a co-founder of Tinder, the woman who was one of the co-founders of Tinder. And in it, the woman must make the first move. The woman must send the first message. What's fascinating about that is that I match with women on Bumble all the time, and literally 1 out of 5 never send me a message. And when you go back to your question of does this change courtship, well, it's interesting that it has given women a taste of how hard it is to begin a conversation, which personally in the world of courtship, I find the hardest part. Once we begin a conversation, I can start. And that's true in real life as well as online. The hardest thing is to start a conversation. It really is difficult. And the idea that not just the majority, literally from my personal experience, 80% of women who I match with on Bumble choke on not sending the first message. And then you can't speak to each other after 24 hours if you haven't sent the first message. So then they just disappear.
I would agree with that and disagree in some ways. I think as a guy, it is that's the hardest part, approaching. But for women, it's like you could literally just walk up and spit out some stream of consciousness. And if you're cute, yes, we're going to be like, oh, that's interesting. What's your name? But
you know what? But the women don't even try. They don't even do it on Bumble 80% of the time.
All right, David,
that's
if you had to put
bots,
your...
That's another show.
If you had to put the house on it and bet whether utilizing only dating apps for the rest of your life, you would find true love and happiness, would you make that bet?
No, I would not. And there are a bunch of reasons for it. So I've actually been dating online since 2000. So I'm one of the old timers as well. I have tried a ton of different dating apps and websites. There are real differences and distinctions. My favorite of all time was Nerve.com. Are you guys familiar with it?
That's the site I met my husband on.
Yeah.
Really?
I
used this in New York from around 2000, I don't know, 2 to 2005.
That's when it was really popping.
I am still friends with the women that I met on Nerve.com. Somehow they attracted some of the most interesting, smart, beautiful, just like people I wanted to meet. I have not found that pool ever since then.
It was niched, you know. Whenever something becomes popularized, it gets watered down. So back then, that's why I went to Nerve, because they said, "Oh, it's these sort of interesting, intellectual, edgy, yeah."
Like, you know,
I found
you
the edgiest one there.
Think I'm going to meet my husband there. I mean, one of their main sponsors was a sex party called One Leg Up, which was run by two women.
That I didn't know. So I didn't know about the whole, and it's also part of a like erotic magazine, which I did not know when I joined. And if I had, I maybe wouldn't have, but I found the most straight-laced guy that was ever on Nerve in history. But I wonder, okay, so you say that messaging is the hardest thing. Obviously, David, I saw your show F Tinder, A Love Story, and I know that you did quite well, even with people not writing back. You had enough that wrote back to you where you could write a whole show about it, okay? So if you were to advise the people listening who are struggling with that first message, what is your technique?
First of all, end with a question. That's one of the simplest things that most people don't do. End with a question so the person can respond easily. Second of all, make the question about something in someone's profile. It's the hardest on Tinder because I would estimate 20% of women on Tinder don't have anything in their profile. And what tiny things they do, it'll be requirements about you. I like to wear heels, so you have to be over 6 feet tall, otherwise I won't respond.
Right.
Like, okay, so what do I ask? What are your favorite shoe designers? ladies, give us something to ask a question about. That's what I would say to the women.
Yeah.
And then men, ask a question. And don't go on. Leave it short, sweet, and see if they respond.
Or you can just go with the Aziz Ansari master of none approach and say, I'm going to Whole Foods. Can I get you anything? And then he has like 100% response.
My buddy's tried it. It works.
It does?
Yeah, it's true.
I've almost never, on occasion, I've done joke things like as an opener. For me, they feel very much like lines, and I couldn't do a line if you gave one to me.
Hey, David, stupid question here. What's the difference between a comedy special and a one-man show?
That is a fantastic question. And you want to know something really funny? So I'm trying to sell out my last show. And one of the ways I'm doing that is I'm actually on Bumble right now. And in my profile, I say, I have a comedy special. And I chose those words very specifically. A comedy special live that I will give you a free ticket to if you say you want to come. And I've already got one taker. She's coming tonight. And so the reason I used comedy special in Bumble because people get what a comedy special is. Now, this is not a comedy special, quite frankly. There are a bunch of different reasons for that. Almost every comedy special I'm familiar with is a stand-up. And one of the tools that a stand-up has is a microphone that they physically hold in their hand. That changes performance. The microphone and the amplification creates distance. Now, there's some solo shows, monologues, et cetera, however you would like to describe them, and each of them can mean very different things. Where they do use microphones, and I've actually done solo shows that use a microphone as well, but never a handheld. So, first of all, in the storytelling world, places like The Moth, they do use a microphone, but they actually tell you before you get on stage, do not touch the mic. And having your hands available in order to express yourself actually changes how you tell a story. The second thing is, for my show, it is fairly theatrical. And Damona, I'd be interested in your thoughts on this, because I include sound, music to actually accompany certain sections of the piece to make it more theatrical. And I also have, at times, very dramatic lighting. And lastly, most importantly, narratively, this is a love story. And there is a narrative arc that I've created from beginning, middle to end that hopefully takes you on a journey. The majority of comedy specials, with some exceptions, tell short anecdotes at most, or just set up knockdown, jokes one after the next. This, we're really following a journey, and it's very much created in the form of my mentor, Spalding Gray, who really created the entire realm of autobiographical monologue back in the 70s, which came to fame when Jonathan Demme, the director of Silence of the Lambs, made a film of his most famous monologue called Swimming to Cambodia back in 1985. And for me, he was a mentor of mine. I'm deeply inspired by his work. And for me, having a narrative structure that is not just about funny. In fact, I honestly had no idea truly what was going to be funny. I've been a little bit shocked by how much people are laughing. And I'm not doing the show for the jokes. I'm doing it to tell a story. And especially in the second half of the story, even though there is a lot of funny, I hope, at least from what I heard, especially like during the sex club scene.
if that doesn't make you want to see it, I don't know what does.
But it's really about the emotional impact.
Right. I think that is a big defining point between comedy, and I used to work in comedy, and storytelling. And David, you really do an excellent job with taking people on a journey. So hopefully people listening, if they still can get a ticket to the show, they can see you performing tonight at the Hollywood Fringe Festival. But F. Tinder, A Love Story, will live on. You are writing a book, as you said, and people can find out more info on that book and on your journey at f-tinder.com. So I wish you lots of luck. Break a leg tonight.
And
keep crushing on Tinder or offline or wherever, because you're doing something right. And the right one is still out there for you, David. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
There is more of Dates and Mates still coming your way. We have more Technically Dating coming right at you after this break. So stick around. I'm Damona Hoffman here with Ray Christian, and we'll be right back.
Let me ask you a question. Are you getting enough? I bet you'd love more, right? Well, AdamandEve.com wants to give you more with 10 free gifts. First, you'll get a sexy surprise for her. Second, a specially selected toy for him. And third, a little something we know you'll both enjoy. Plus, you'll get 6 full-length adult movies on DVD. And number 10, free shipping on your entire order. So what do you have to do to get your 10 free gifts? It's not hard. Just go to adamandeve.com and select any one item. It could be an adventurous new toy, sexy piece of lingerie, or anything you desire. Just enter offer code GIFT18 at checkout, and you'll get all 10 free gifts. Go check out AdamandEve.com today. Select one item and get 10 free gifts, including free shipping. When you enter offer code GIFT18, that's GIFT18 at AdamandEve.com.
Welcome back to Dates and Mates. I promised you more, and more you shall receive in Technically Dating.
Technically Dating.
Damona, we went rummaging through the basement and unboxed some doozies.
The top floor, not the basement.
You know what's weird? The West Coast, we don't have basements out here.
Yes, the attic. We rummaged through the attic.
The East Coast, it's like big on basements. Almost every house has a basement.
I know. I lived there. All right, open up the whatever, the storm doors.
Cool story, bro.
What's in there?
Okay. Female, a female, she's 17. And she says, I've been having sex with this guy for the past month, and we both agreed there were no feelings, just sex. I started to catch feelings, and then I found out that he was pregnant, that he got his ex pregnant, and supposedly she is crazy as fuck. So we just continued to bone on the DL, but after I found out about that, he's become extremely distant when I'm not around. I'm confused by that. But he says, and she says, when I'm there, it's like we are together, and he expresses feelings about situations that he's dealing with. So I feel like I basically know his life, but I don't know if he has feelings and is just scared of this because of her.
This is the point, my dear, where you tap out of this situation, okay? Because his life is about to get really complicated. In fact, it got pretty complicated already, right? So if the girlfriend is also crazy AF, as you say that she is, or as others say she is, things are only going to get weirder and wackier for you. So I think this is the time, if you're agreeing that you agreed it was only sex, and those relationships usually have a shelf life, and right now, this is the time to toss it out.
Yeah, it's amazing that people feel like stuck on a lover or a significant other that just has so many warning signs and so many red flags. But is it, maybe it's just the heart wants what it wants, or this people are scared of being alone. It's like what a powerful fear, that the fear of being alone must be to keep you in terrible relationships like this.
That was deep. Actually, that was quite deep, Ray. That may be the deepest thing you've said all day. But beyond that, this idea of catching feelings is something that I think women in particular need to be very careful about. And, you know, I'm not a traditionalist in terms of gender roles or courtship or any of that stuff. But I just know that biologically, women are predisposed to want to bond with men after they have sex. And we try to be tough and we say, well, we can have sex like men, and we can walk away with no feelings. But guess what? This is an example of how women are biologically prone to want to bond with someone. Even someone like this, who clearly is not a guy that's looking out for your interest or even really gives a crap about you.
So catching feelings is a phrase that actually originated in D.C., in my hometown, in like 98, 99. It's a great phrase. I'm a big fan. But it's become very popular now, and it's been labeled with this negative connotation of, oh, I caught feelings, I'm weak. And as you mentioned, you're right. Women are more predisposed because of oxytocin to catch feelings, as it were. So she's got to be careful. And like, this guy has already shown that he has zero pull-out game. He already knocked some other girl up. Don't be mistake number two with this guy. Go. Ooh. Get.
Ooh, speaking of the pullout game, by the way, did you hear about this new app that can, it's like the birth control app. It launched in Europe, and there was a big, the pharmaceutical companies were trying to shut it down because it actually can totally revolutionize birth control today. This woman created it, and you put a temperature, you put a thermometer that's tied into the phone in your mouth, and you gauge your temperature, and then you can track ovulation, And
no
it,
way.
Yes, it is as accurate as the hormonal birth control when you're tracking that way, and it will tell you if you're fertile or not during that period.
Because I've heard that the actual ovulation day can bounce around within a few days window.
Yes.
It's like an evolutionary tactic so the guys don't know exactly when.
That.
So this is saying it can tell by your temperature, it knows exactly when you're ovulating?
Yes, your temperature and the timing. So anyways, maybe she should get one of those. Like the pull-out game, it just doesn't work, Ray.
Well, that's
an interesting... It doesn't work. It doesn't... Let's be real.
It's the rhythm method.
It's not a method.
Combined with the pull-out game. But, I mean, birth control is just not good. It's not good. It's poison. It messes with hormones and the internal systems. Can we agree on that?
It's better than unwanted pregnancies. Move on. Let's
agree
move
to
on.
agree to disagree. Okay. Young lady, she's 25. She says, do you trust someone who lies to you? Even if it's the tiniest lie. A lie is a lie, right?
A lie is a lie. I think she answered her own question here. And just putting trust and lie in the same sentence should tell you something. No, I don't think you should trust someone who lies to you. I think you should be very cautious and know that someone will show you who they are very early on. And you can either choose to believe that or you can ignore it and let yourself get burned. It's your choice.
My mother has a phrase, which is a relationship with a liar is no relationship at all. And it kind of has stuck with me, and I believe this. And the interesting thing is, if you look at the scale of lies, a tiny lie is it's a canary in the coal mine. Because if this person is afraid to come out with the truth on this stupid topic or whatever makes it tiny, quote unquote, then when the shit hits the fan and it's like some real consequences are on the lie, they're going to be, this liar is going to be even more inclined to lie. So how can you trust them? And I have a deep burn in my heart, a deep hatred for liars and thieves. And once someone has lied to me just once, I kind of always cast a little bit of a shadow of a doubt into everything they say. And it's unfortunate, but yes, the first lie you catch somebody in, it changes everything a little bit.
Mm-hmm. I think we're in agreement on that.
All right. A young lady, she's 29. She says, I went through a very hard breakup situation, which led me to start pulling out my hair.
Literally.
Now I can't stop. I've lost so much hair from stress and pulling. How can I stop?
You know what's so funny? My husband actually plucks his eyebrows when he's stressed, when he's writing.
So does my sister.
I always know when he's like puzzled about something that he's writing because he'll have half an eyebrow. He'll come out of his office with half an eyebrow. I'm like,
do you have something? Like everyone has one thing they touch somewhere usually on their face.
Oh,
it's their go-to.
Oh no, I pick my nails. I have since I was a kid.
That's a good one.
And
at least it's not that visible.
It would be better not to. And I think it's hereditary because my dad does it and now I see my kids do it. And I don't know if it's because they've seen me do it or because it's just something that is like in our blood. But anyways.
Mine is I rub my nose. It feels so good to rub my nose. The problem is it looks like I'm picking my nose. It's a terrible tick.
Put a book up in front of it or your phone. Okay. In all seriousness, this is bad. So this is a manifestation of anxiety that she's having. And obviously, if it is affecting her life to the point of her having chunks of hair missing, it's something that needs to be dealt with. And there are a lot of professionals that can help you, from therapists to psychiatrists. Maybe you have some anxiety. And like, I like dealing with things through natural methods. But sometimes if you have a chemical imbalance going on, you might need some medicine. And there's no harm in that. If that's what you need, that's going to make it better. But honey, you should not be literally pulling your hair out. I know guys make us want to pull our hair out. But you don't actually do it unless there's something that is underlying that you haven't dealt with or don't have a method to handle that anxiety.
Yeah, it's almost like the craziness of the manifestation of your anxiety should dictate how quickly you fix it. This is a crazy manifestation. You, your husband, you know, plucking his eyebrows and me rubbing my nose a little bit. You know, maybe I have some anxiety I could address. But when you're pulling your hair out, okay, go see professional help ASAP, because that's a destructive self-harm behavior.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
probably that's, look weird.
That's,
you probably look really
intense.
Weird.
Right. You're not hurting yourself.
Hair patches?
I know, right? It's not going to help you with the next relationship. You rubbing your nose, that's not harming you. But cutting, if you're doing, folks at home, if you're doing any sort of cutting or self-mutilation, which this is, that is pretty high on the serious.
Yeah, the comb over is not a good look on a girl. All right, young lady, she's 34, my favorite age, as you know. She says, I need honest advice as to my current situation. So my jerk of an ex willingly gave me $300 to get my SUV fixed, which I did. I never asked him for it at all. He claimed that he loved me, which was a lie, and that I didn't need to ask. I told him that I would pay him back, and he said no. So now that things have ended due to his nasty, horrible attitude and temper, he's blowing up my phone, hatefully demanding that I give it back to him. I don't feel like I have to because it was a gift, right?
Oh, this is complicated. Whenever money gets involved, it's complicated. But I would just say, how much would it be worth to you to not have the stress of him blowing up your phone and demanding money from you? For me, probably $300. It would probably be worth that just to make him go away. And clearly, I know you're saying, girlfriend, that he's nasty and horrible, but clearly there's a lot of venom in your question. So clearly you are also harboring some feelings here that he might be reacting to. And this is one of those cases where it's best to just put up a wall and go your separate ways. And even if you thought it was a gift at the time, if it was not explicitly defined as a gift, it's just going to be easier for your life if you just pay him back. You got the SUV. You got out good. I think take the SUV and run.
So my sister and her boyfriend recently went to D.C. They flew out to see his family. And they get on the plane, or they're getting ready to get on the plane. And he says, and they got one upgrade to first class. And he said, hey, so I just got an upgrade to first class. Do you want it? And it kind of surprised her. She didn't know that it happened. She's like, oh, no, you can take it. And he's like, okay.
That was a test.
And then he went and sat in first class on the flight. And she was like a little bit butthurt about it. And I told her what I would tell this guy. Like, if you say something, be ready to back up your words. And if she's going to feel bad about not getting first class, she should have jumped on the opportunity and said, yes, thank you. You're such a loving boyfriend. Amazing. And then jumped in first class. Same thing with this guy. He said, no, don't pay me back. That's the end of it. End of story. So the solution here is block this dum-dum and move on.
There's a third, going back to your sister's airline snafu. I think there's an option where you say, why don't we just sit together? Like, I'm flying with you and I want to be with you. Because actually, I've had this conversation with my husband because I fly a lot, so I sometimes get upgrades. And he's like, if you were flying with us, you would leave us in the lurch. And I'm like, I really would not. I would not. It would not be enjoyable for me to sit in first class drinking my champagne,
laying
awful. In my lie flat bed,
terrible,
while the rest of my family is suffering in steerage. I couldn't do it, Ray. I couldn't do it.
So if there's one seat left next to your husband in coach with all the unwashed masses, you would go back and do it?
I swear. Now, I'm not religious, but I swear on the Bible. I would sit in the back with them.
I may have to call shenanigans. All right. But different way. So let's say Seth buys you a trip and you guys are going to some trip somewhere, and then you get the one upgrade, no seats sitting next to each other, one in first class, one in coach. Do you sit in first class?
Look, if the seats are separated and there's no way to be together, like maybe they're all sold out in the back of the plane and somebody has to take the first class seat, I guess it would have to be me.
Even though he paid his hard-earned money? He dropped his own ducats on this? You're going to take
drops
the first
a lot
class?
Of ducats on this. Trust me, that wouldn't bother him. But yeah, I think in this as it applies here, I agree with you that you have to be able to stand behind. You have to stand behind your word.
But I also feel like we need
it wasn't explicit.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like we need a PSA about phone blocking. Because back in the day, you had to like call the phone company. It was a big hassle. Now, literally with like three taps on your iPhone or maybe your Android if you're living in the 90s, I'm kidding. You can block someone like that. And guess what? You never hear from them. Drama gone. People, it's underutilized. Just block.
Producer Thomas, can we get a more you know? Just kidding. I'm kidding. All right. We have time for a couple more questions. Let's see what else is in the vault.
So we have a young beau. Her name, her age is 18. She says, okay, so one of my really close friends gets a lot of guys like every guy wants her. It's kind of hard for me to be with her because I feel so useless, but I like her, and now I don't know what to do.
Right. I have a soft spot in my heart for this question because growing up, living in the Midwest, there weren't a lot of people that looked like me. And I always felt like the redheaded stepchild with my, you know, Americana look girlfriends.
That exotic look?
That exotic look was not
You're
in.
So exotic.
Stop it. It was not in then. So I can relate to this. I think ultimately, though, it depends on how does your friend treat you about it. And if you and your friends are on the same level, it doesn't matter what's happening with the guys. You know, just if you want to be friends with her, be friends with her. But she shouldn't even be worried about, she's probably less worried about all that attention that she's getting than you are about the attention. You're over-focusing on it because she's saying herself, she feels so useless. I didn't feel useless, but I was just like, why are all these guys going for those chicks? And they could be having me. She needs to adopt that attitude and eventually she will find the right place where her look is in and appreciated.
I like that. It may be tough to come to grips with the concept of you taking the breadcrumbs, the table scraps of your bestie, because they might be a little bit foxier than you. But, you know, there's something to be said about knowing your role and knowing where you stand. And this actually will help you, I think, in the future in dating. We talked about this before. Of one of the problems is people that are like in from San Francisco, the joke is 49ers, a bunch of fours that think they're nines. But people that think they're a six, that they're actually a six, but they think they're a nine, that's not conducive to your own dating life. And I think it's good to know where you stand.
But
and,
there are
and there's
certain
somebody
pools.
For everybody.
Yeah, there's certain pools where your six is a nine.
Right.
And if you're just, maybe you're just dating in the wrong pool. So don't go to places where that girlfriend is going to be, you know, inundated with guys coming up to her. Like, do other stuff where you're in your zone, you know?
Yeah,
maybe it's not
like,
about going to the club.
Go to, like, uglier bars.
Go to uglier bars. No, but I'm saying, like, do something that where you're like, the expert or where you're something that you're passionate about where people want to come up and talk to you for other reasons.
Yeah, and unless your friend is, like, a freak in the sheets to the max, she's probably only going to get one guy per night that she spends time with. Guess what? Usually guys go out with friends, so maybe
that's 20 more for you, girlfriend.
Yeah, you get more people to choose from. Yeah. And she'll bring people, if you're half full, glass half full, she'll bring groups of guys because they will flock to this picturesque, beautiful girl, and then you get the benefit. You get the residual contact high.
Exactly.
As it were.
But boost your own confidence. That's the key.
So
you want to do one more?
Let's do it. So we have a female 25 from Alaska. She says, been dating somebody for 2 months now. I've been on the fence the last few days and feeling like I want to end it. I just found out, though, that he lost his job today. So I'm feeling a little anxious about what to do as I don't want to hurt him when he's already down.
This is such a tough one. If it's already been 2 months, what's another 2 days? I mean, if you don't have to do it today and you know he's already down, maybe this isn't the day to do it. Maybe. You could wait.
It's probably been a while for you, but that feeling of like hanging out with somebody that you just know it's over. It's actually been a while for me too. Like, it's almost like it makes your skin crawl. Like, you have to get out of that relationship ASAP and you want to end it ASAP. So I do sympathize with this young lady, but give him a week. He's about to get dumped, and he just got canned from his job. Got the old heave-ho. The double heave-ho is coming too. You know, give him a week of loving. Give him some fun stuff in the bedroom for just 1 week. And then kick him to the curb.
Oh, that just sets him up for a bigger fall. I think it's just do the kind of slow fade.
The slow fade?
At this point, yeah, like, you know, oh, I heard you lost your job. Sorry to hear that. But she doesn't have to see him again. I don't think she has to see him. It's only been 2 months.
She has to see him again. Give him one night of loving.
See, I actually would just prefer to get the double heave-ho in 1 day, because then I can just be like, sad.
I had a bad day.
Yeah, like a real bad day, because then if I get over the job, I'm like, oh, my girlfriend's still cool, and then she dumps me a few days later, and it's like, oh, it's like
That's
a roller
right.
coaster.
By next week, he could have a fresh start.
Yeah, I would say just get it done. Bring me to the ground, and then I can build myself back up.
If I got the pink slip from my job, I wouldn't mind getting the poison out that night. I think you would agree with that as well.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know, but I feel like she's going to have to be a very good actor to pull it off if she's not interested.
Oh, trust me. Yeah. We're great actors. Well, I don't know. Now, producer Tom has made a good point.
Just when it rains, it pours?
Yeah, maybe. Okay. I'm with you, producer Thomas. Just do it now. I changed my answer.
Don't do it.
Well, now you have a smorgasbord of dating
a board
advice
of smorg
to choose from. So Ray, I like to do fun stuff and shake it up in here a little bit. What do you think about doing a little new kind of game, a new segment?
Oh, do tell.
Let's call it kinky or creepy. Okay,
let's get weird.
In kinky or creepy, we will tell you a crazy sex story, and then we'll both weigh in on whether we think it's kinky or creepy. Okay? So this one comes to us from BuzzFeed. This one's called The Violent Sneeze. You ready? So it says, my boyfriend and I were having sex in the shower, and I felt a sneeze coming on. The force of the sneeze literally squeezed him out of my vagina. He lost his balance and fell over, presumably in the shower with the water hitting his face. Is this kinky or creepy? Sneeze in the shower.
I don't know if it's either. I mean, I guess kinky. There should also be a PSA that sex in the shower is like wildly overrated, but and now apparently dangerous. I would say, you know, I guess, you know, it's kooky. Wait, is that the option? Kooky or creepy?
Creepy. Creepy.
It's not creepy. If anything, it's kooky. Kinky.
Yeah.
Kinky.
I like the shower idea.
You do?
I do.
Water is not a good lubricant. Kinky.
True. It's surprising. It is not. Luckily, there are other lubricants available to people who need to use them.
Like coconut oil. It's an underrated... I've never used it, but
I don't know if it's supposed to go in.
Asking for a friend, but I heard.
Okay, well, let me give you another story. We'll see if we can get this one, if we'll be kinky or creepy. So this one is from Reddit. This is, we're calling it MMA MIA. He says, my girl was obsessed with MMA and kickboxing. She was normal when she was sober, but after some alcohol, all her inhibitions would disappear entirely. One night she had too much to drink and she ended up asking me to massage her back. I finished rubbing her back and I laid face down expecting one back. Instead, she pulls my pants and boxers off and then starts spontaneously doing stuff. And I was getting pretty hot until suddenly I hear her yell, TSA! And I feel a sharp pain go up my butt and into my back. She karate chopped the crack of my backside and I had a bruise there for a week. Is that kinky or creepy?
100% creepy. That is awful.
But but some people like the BDSM.
Not unannounced with a quick TSA shout. I need some warning before that.
I think it was kinky up until the TSA. Because that feels to me like that's taking it a little bit too far. And then you're picturing. Now we're going back to the airline references. Oh, we have so many more.
One more. I like this one.
Okay, wait, which one? You want to do the BuzzFeed one?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this guy says, while my girlfriend's parents were away for the weekend, we did a bit of naked cooking. She was only wearing an apron while I had sex with her over the oven. We got our bodily fluids on the food when I pulled out. But we decided to eat it all anyway. Kinky or creepy?
Oh, that's faux show. Just a little kinky.
Oh, no way. That is so creepy. Eating it? Disgusting.
I mean, you kind of do a little eating it as it is with normal lovemaking.
It's mostly just salt or either way.
And on that note, we must end the show.
It's the preferred condiment.
If we haven't offended you too much, maybe you would consider subscribing to this show. And that's how you'll get all of the freshest episodes the minute that they launch on iTunes. We'd love to hear your review. Maybe not of this show. This got a little bit kinky. This got a little bit creepy. Kinky or creepy, this show? Kinky?
Kinky.
Kinky and creepy. But we want to hear from you. So you can hit me up on Instagram or Twitter at Damona Hoffman. And you can pop over to Ray's Instagram and see what's happening in his world at Ray Christian_LA. Until next week, we wish you happy dating.